Book for Luggage Stolper presents Leadership in Statecraft, Studies in Power, edited by Kurt Almqvist, Alistair Benn, and Matthias Hesserus, read by me, Helen Lloyd. Global Japan Charts a New Course by Kentaro Fujimoto. Since the establishment of the Abe government in 2012, Japan has been undergoing a quiet but significant change in its foreign and security policy. This trend has intensified under the Kishida government, which assumed power in 2021. This change has been triggered by a marked deterioration in the security environment around Japan. A consistent trend has been the rise of China and, more recently, Russia's aggression against Ukraine. These have dramatically changed the Japanese perception of international relations. The Japanese people believe that Japan has moved from the post-Cold War era to an era of more severe state-to-state competition. In this context, Japan has begun to respond to the changes in the security environment in a pragmatic manner, while maintaining its own identity of freedom and democracy. In a deeper sense, Japan may be undergoing the process of reconstructing its statecraft. Statecraft is an unfamiliar concept for post-war Japan. Enjoying 78 years of peace after the Second World War, it was not as necessary to consider the role and actions of Japan as a traditional state. With the increasingly fraught security environment, however, Japan has needed to redefine its role as a state and its practice of statecraft. The late Prime Minister Shinzo Abe initiated this endeavor. He was a rare breed in Japanese politics and a true visionary. Perhaps statecraft was part of his character, as the idea of a nation-state was so natural to him. He had no hesitation about the idea that states must strengthen their military capabilities to defend themselves in accordance with the changes in the international environment. Some of his critics called him a right-wing nationalist, but his character was multi-layered. He was fully committed to the alliance with the United States and basic values, including freedom and democracy. More importantly, pragmatism was his key characteristic. He sought to change Japan's post-war security policy in a bold but flexible manner. As Prime Minister, Abe established the National Security Secretariat, the NSS, in 2014. Before that, the Prime Minister of Japan had only a handful of staff in his office to assist with his responsibilities in foreign and defense policies. The NSS was initially created with about 80 staff, which has now expanded to 120. One of its main purposes is to overcome stovepiping in the Japanese bureaucracy, especially between foreign and defense policies. The NSS has also played an effective role in formulating medium to long-term strategies, including the National Security Strategy in 2022. In the Abe government, the legal structure of Japan's national security policy changed significantly. Due to the previous interpretation of Article 9 of Japan's constitution, the exercise of the right to collective self-defense was prohibited. The Japan Self-Defense Forces, SDF, could not fight together when the forces of other countries such as the US were attacked. It was a long-held belief of Abe that Japan needed to change this interpretation. He took on the issue despite opposition and hesitation on the part of the public. The legislation to change this interpretation passed, and Japan is now able to exercise the right to collective self-defense if the situation affects Japan's existential national interests. This is a major breakthrough in the history of post-war Japan. Many other legal steps were also taken. For example, the SDF is now able to protect US and Australian military assets during joint drills and other activities. This legal measure will also be applied to the UK in the future. A decision was made to introduce the so-called standoff missile capability. This is the origin of counter-strike capabilities introduced by the Kishida government. Previously, Japan did not even have medium or long-range missiles that could strike targets 300 or 500 kilometers away. However, Japan's neighbours, such as China, Russia, North Korea and South Korea, possess long-range missiles. The Japanese archipelago extends vastly from north to south. In particular, Japan is vulnerable in its defence of the southwestern islands, which span 1,000 kilometres in length. Therefore, in 2018, the Abe government introduced Norwegian-made JSM missiles with a range of 500 kilometres to be loaded on F-35 aircraft. This direction did not change in the Kishida government. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is from a more centrist faction within the Liberal Democratic Party than Abe. However, as Kishida stated in an interview with the Washington Post in January 2023, the reality is that the leader of a country cannot choose the era in which the person takes that leadership position. Kishida is also a pragmatist and has a clear direction for Japan at its historical turning point. Among his major policies is the drastic reinforcement of defence capabilities, a policy at least as bold as Abe's. The Kishida government has placed economic security as one of the key issues in its national security policy. Given the existence of various threats through economic means, the government is taking necessary measures to improve Japan's self-reliance and resilience in technological areas. Specifically, the government passed comprehensive legislation in May 2022 to promote economic security, including supply chain resilience and protection of critical infrastructure sectors. Furthermore, discussions are underway in the government to strengthen Japan's information security, including security clearances. Prime Minister Kishida has made drastic reforms in defence policy too. The size of Japan's defence budget was one of the main subjects that he tackled. Previously, Japan's defence spending was roughly 1% of its GDP. In the National Security Strategy, published in December 2022, Japan decided to increase its defence spending to reach 2% of its GDP by 2027. In the strategy, the Kishida government opted to unequivocally recognise the possession of counter-strike capabilities. Japan possesses ballistic missile defence systems, but given the drastic development of the missile capabilities of countries surrounding Japan, there was a mounting need for Japan to possess capabilities to launch an effective counter-attack against an opponent to prevent further armed attacks from it. Japan plans to introduce Tomahawk missiles and develop its indigenous cruise missiles. Kishida has said many times that it has become clear that globalization and interdependence alone cannot guarantee peace and development in the international community. There has been a striking change in Japan's policy toward Russia, too. Russia's aggression against Ukraine has dramatically changed the Japanese view of security. For Japan, the Russian aggression against Ukraine represented the complete end of the post-Cold War world. Japan is the only Asian country in the G7. Japan's participation in the measures against Russia has changed the nature of the fight from one confined to the Atlantic world to one of a global character. In this sense, it was a consequential decision for the entire international community. As a result of this decision, the relations between Japan and Europe have become even closer. The two sides must now think more seriously about how they can cooperate more strategically to deal with the geopolitical challenges in the Eurasian continent. Even though the aggression took place in distant Europe, Japan considered how to respond to it as a matter of its security mainly for two reasons. First, Japan saw that the future of the free and open international order rests on the course of the war in Ukraine. Second, geopolitically, this war happened at the centre of the Eurasian landmass. This inevitably affected the security of Japan. One interesting parallel in history is Japan's response to the Nazi-Soviet Pact in 1939. Having failed to grasp the dynamics of Nazi Germany, an anti-communist state that surprisingly made a deal with the Soviets, then Prime Minister Hironuma stated, "The situation in Europe was complex and bizarre." Fast forward to February 2022, and when faced with a major geopolitical event in Europe, this time Japan did not fail to take the right response. Japan decided to change its existing policy toward Russia and introduce severe sanctions. Kishida's geopolitical assessment is clear. If this unilateral change to the status quo by force is allowed, this would be followed in Asia and elsewhere in the world. As he has said, Ukraine today may be Asia tomorrow. The National Security Strategy describes China as an unprecedented strategic challenge to the peace and security of Japan and the stability of the international community. The strategy cites such elements as China's national goal of the great restoration of the Chinese nation, a broad and rapid build-up of its military power, especially nuclear and missile capabilities, and strengthened cooperation with Russia. Regarding Taiwan, China has not ruled out the possibility of using military force while adhering to its policy of peaceful unification. The strategy concludes that this is a challenge that should be met by Japan's comprehensive national power and cooperation with its allies and like-minded countries. Based on this perception, Prime Minister Kishida iterated his clear views on the mid- to long-term goal of his policy toward China in his speech in Washington, D.C. in January 2023. He said, "We need China to make a strategic decision that it will abide by established international rules and that it cannot and will not change the international order in ways that are contrary to these rules. Efforts to do so will be long-lasting." The recognition of the long-term competition with China brings us to the next key question. What can we do to induce a strategic decision from China to coexist with the international community? It is difficult, however, to draw a sure path forward because China is a revisionist power that seeks to change the international order. An important element would be a sense of timeline. As an intermediate aim, Japan sets the goal of constructive and stable relations with China. Japan will express its concerns directly to China and strongly urge it to adhere to responsible behavior while seeking to cooperate where possible on common issues. This concept is almost equivalent to what the United States defines as a guardrail. Managing the relations in a constructive and stabilizing manner will be impossible, however, if our side is weak and vulnerable. The National Security Strategy contains the phrase "new equilibrium" to articulate the relations between deterrence and dialogue. This is an important concept, although it has not received much attention. What it meant was that we should restore the balance of power, enhance deterrence, and reduce the likelihood of war. It is for this reason that Japan has decided to significantly strengthen its defense capabilities. At the same time, Japan will encourage serious dialogue with China. It is important to communicate concerns openly, and this must be done at the highest possible level. Communication at the leaders' level is particularly important. The unity of the allies and like-minded countries is also crucial in conveying messages to China. For Japan, the alliance with the United States is vital, and in the Indo-Pacific region, cooperation between the two countries is being strengthened day by day. A uniform message on international peace and stability should be sent to show the seriousness of their position and to avoid misunderstandings and miscalculations by the Chinese. Japan plays a unique role in strengthening the free and open international order. Order reflects the distribution of power, and power determines which order will prevail. But order is also a contest of ideas. Which ideas have the most appeal will also determine power shifts. As an alternative image to the post-Cold War international order, Russia is oriented towards a multipolar order. China was previously oriented toward the US-China bipolar order, and more recently a multipolar order. In addition, between China, Russia, and the West, some countries opt for the middle ground, the so-called Global South. The direction in which these countries move and the degree to which they embrace any one vision may also affect the future of international order and the balance of power. In 2016, then Prime Minister Abe presented his vision of a free and open Indo-Pacific, FOIP. The basic idea behind FOIP is to enhance the connectivity of the Indo-Pacific region and nurture and enrich it as a place that values freedom, the rule of law, and is free from force and coercion. This was also put forward at the G7 summit in 2023 under the presidency of Japan. This vision has resonated with many countries, including the United States, India, ASEAN, and Europe. FOIP is a watershed moment for Japan's foreign policy. FOIP was advanced by prime ministers after Abe. In March 2023, Kishida developed FOIP in response to the international environment following the aggression against Ukraine. The backdrop to this was the divided response of the international community, particularly at the United Nations, to Russia's aggression against Ukraine. It came as a surprise to Japan that the reaction to the invasion was so divided. In response to the divided reactions of many countries to the aggression, the new FOIP reaffirms the minimum basic principles that the international community should uphold. These principles, which are stipulated in the UN Charter, like territorial integrity and refraining from using force, should be observed in all parts of the world. For Japan, one of the most difficult aspects of the international order in the current international environment is the question of values. Japan is a member of the G7 and is fully committed to values such as freedom, democracy, and human rights. These values have become part of the identity of the Japanese people. However, the extent to which values are reflected in foreign policy is an increasingly difficult question. Especially as the influence of the countries of the Global South increases, this issue becomes even more important. In an increasingly divided and chaotic international community, the G7 has proven itself worthy. It is a band based on common values, and it was the group that functioned most effectively during the Russian aggression against Ukraine. The G7 must first come together to maintain international peace and solve international economic crises such as energy and food, and global issues such as health and climate change. In particular, Japan, the United States, and Europe must unite to manage relations with China. At the same time, relations with countries outside the G7 and like-minded countries require a more pragmatic approach. In that speech in Washington, Prime Minister Kishida sought to articulate this. He said, "Japan believes that the question of values in foreign policy needs to be considered in a historical and cultural context. The world that emerges after the current period of transition will not be one of convergence on a single set of values, as was generally believed in the era of globalization. We will not be able to force many of the countries of the Global South to accept our values as they are. We need to be more committed to our values, but when engaging with them, we need to be humble without preconceptions and have a good understanding of their historical and cultural backgrounds. It will then become increasingly important to share the vision of the FOIP, as I mentioned earlier, that is, the principle that the international community should be driven by rules, not by force, and not by the weak and powerful." This approach was reflected in the discussions of the G7 in Hiroshima. The summit was challenging for Japan as its host, since it needed to handle three critical international issues simultaneously: Ukraine, the Indo-Pacific, including China, and the relationship with the Global South. Kishida invited the leaders from the Global South, such as India and Brazil, as well as President Zelensky of Ukraine. The leaders talked not only about Ukraine, but also about the importance of resolving conflicts, violence, and geopolitical tensions in other parts of the world. As chair, Kishida summarized the issues. We need to preserve the principles of the United Nations Charter, like respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity. We support just and permanent peace, especially in Ukraine. We will not allow any unilateral attempts to change the status quo by force or coercion anywhere in the world. We need to protect the free and open international order based on the rule of law. Japan's changing foreign policy was initiated out of necessity for its survival, that is, to defend its territory, to maintain its independence and a free and democratic system, and to reverse 3 decades of stagnation towards economic revival. Whether Japan succeeds or not is not a matter for Japan alone. It will greatly affect the future of the Japan-US alliance and the free and open international order of the entire world. Like it or not, Japan has become one of the most critical actors in contemporary international politics.